For 13 seasons, RuPaul's Drag Race has been bringing underground artists into the mainstream. And sometimes, the world's just not ready for the gag. This time, the latest, greatest gasp for air is a t-shirt designed by drag queen Gottmik, which prominently displays the scars from their top surgery. Ooh, you got controversy! Gottmik's t-shirt alludes to the famous boobs on a t-shirt design that Vivienne Westwood made for the Sex Pistols, which celebrated the feminist anti-bra movement of the 70s. But this new design, featuring Gottmik's chest scars, essentially has the same message. Ditch what's bothering you and fly free!
Today, New York City drag personality Kareem Mick Jagger joins us to take a look at Gottmik's controversial new t-shirt design and what exactly was Tessica Brown trying to do with that Gorilla Glue spray to lay an edge. And what does it mean to lay an edge? Is it as kinky as I hope? Plus, is it too late to accept Justin Timberlake's apology to Janet Jackson and Britney Spears 17 years later?
Mandalorian star Gina Carano goes back to her home planet.
And farewell to queer musician Ari Gold, New York City nightlife personality, star in Star Booty, and child singer in the My Buddy Doll commercial that later became the inspiration for Chucky and the horror film Child's Play.
Don't forget his appearance in Gem and the Holograms. Truly outrageous. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Season greetings, Feast of Fun podcast.
Hi, is this Kareem Abdul Mick McJagger?
You added a couple of syllables in there, but close enough. Yeah, I'll answer to that. As long as the check cashes, we're good.
Good to hear your voice. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, Kareem. It's Mark.
And Fausto from Feast of Fun.
What did you do to celebrate the holiday?
What did I do to celebrate the holiday? I spent all day in Final Cut putting together a music video for this show that I'm about to be in that I'm very excited about.
Ooh, what's the show?
It is called Vinyl Fantasy Presents Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814 on February 22nd, a Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm doing Love Will Never Do, which is one of my favorite Janet Jackson songs. I've never performed Janet outside of Drag Suicide, so I've never done a prepared number or performance by Janet Jackson in the, I guess, 7 years that I've been doing drag, so I'm very excited.
Will there be a nipple reveal, or are you always show your nipples, though, right? So it's not, because you're mostly shirtless for your gigs, right?
Well, a lot of times I'll wear a bra or something like that, or I'll wear like a crop top or something. So the reveal is that I will be have my nipples covered for most of the video. So.
And then you're going to take it off and there's going to be little stickers of Justin Timberlake on there with his tongue stuck out and be like, I'm sorry, 17 years later.
Never, I would never disrespect Mrs. Jackson like that. Oh. Never.
What do you make about the whole thing? What did you say about that apology? Kareem?
You know, I said that we should just, when an apology is over a decade late, when it's just been way too long and somebody finally comes out with an apology, we should call that pulling a Timberlake. Just totally Timberlaked it.
Better Timberlake than never?
Better Timberlake than never.
Mm. Timberlake, honey. Just put it in there, you know?
Look, on Valentine's Day, that's the direction.
Podcasting wouldn't really exist if it wasn't for the whole scandal, right? And so we dug up the whole what the heck happened here, you know? And it seems like MTV's people, Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, the choreographer, the publicist, and even the caterer was all in on the fact that Janet's boob would be shown, and they even went out of their way to buy a nipple piercing so they could show it, you know? Yeah. And I guess that was their idea. Like, it won't be so controversial because it has jewelry on it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it sort of shows their and in some ways, like, an innocence of intent that they were like, hey, a breast is beautiful. America's going to be delighted when they see Janet's plump bosoms on the network.
You know, we grew up watching her on Good Times, right?
Yeah, and Penny.
And she's Michael Jackson's sister. It was like, everybody wanted to see her boobs.
Yeah.
It's hard to figure out how that would have accidentally happened. I mean, just looking at the material that that's made out of, like, that doesn't look like something that you would just accidentally just playfully rip. Like, that seems like something that you would have to plan. But at the same time, I didn't design the fabric, and I was not on the stage at the time, so I don't know what actually happened. But what's not fair is that she got the blame for it, and he got off pretty much scot-free.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, and that seems like, as American, you can be a playboy and have sex with all sorts of women all the time, but if you're a woman and you hook up with, a couple of different guys, then, you become the slut, you're the outcast. But, this article that we had read, it said that it was planned, but also, too, it's like, when it was planned, if it didn't come out, I think that they were afraid to kind of fess up that it was planned, and then they were kind of like all in on it, because there was this idea that there would be like this big fine, so they wanted to be like, you can kind of like curse, I guess, like on national TV if it's like unintentional or do something like that, but if it's intentional, then they can slap you with the big fine. Now, that fine was never, I mean, they levied a fine, but that fine was never paid.
Well, it's not that it wasn't paid. They went to court and it was lifted.
Okay.
So the only person who paid was Janet Jackson and her team. So part of it is, like, a lot of publicists and a lot of people involved in it said that, to Justin Timberlake's defense is that he went out and did damage control, and Janet Jackson and her team panicked and just hid. And didn't talk about it, and it would have been and honestly, like, I'm not Janet Jackson, you're not Janet Jackson, we don't know what she was dealing with at the time. We have to respect her decision, her
artistic choice,
her agency to make right or wrong decisions at the time, and in hindsight, it probably would have been a good opportunity to bring up talking about racism and the objectification of women's bodies and so on. But I think, she really wasn't prepared to deal with that. And America really wasn't interested in listening to what she had to say either.
I mean, America has a long and storied history of not listening to what Black women have to say.
Right.
So no surprise there.
What is it we said about the Trump being acquitted? It's like, it's not that we're expected it, and it's not that we're shocked. We're just angry at the reality of the situation.
Very, very, right?
And so with Janet Jackson, it's like, we're still dealing with this. How many years later? Is it
17 years? But I supported it from day one. I thought, whatever. It's cute. It's fun. Justin goes on to bring sexy back, and that was kind of like the start of it, right? Is like, here it is. So I don't know. It was just, I was working as a bartender at the time that it happened, and I just caught it out of the corner of my eye, and everybody at the bar was kind of like, wait a second. Like, it was all like, what just happened? Like, we didn't know. We're like, I think she showed her tit. And it wasn't until, like, even like much later that night or something that
I had it on Vimeo. Yeah. We had digitally recorded it. And I was like, oh my God, this is history in the making. Mm. And I couldn't believe my eyes, right?
Yeah. But also, too, is like, with the podcast, with our podcast and everything like that, that kind of incident really fueled the podcast revolution, because people were just like, screw this censorship. Now we have some new media, and let's figure out ways to get on the internet and do other things, so we don't have to have these conservative people over our heads.
Go around the FCC.
Yeah.
In 2004, nobody was on the internet. Except us.
I mean, just by yourselves, Homer Simpson in 3D land.
Lady Bunny, Misunderstood. A few handful of drag queens had a forum called the Motherboards in New York City. And that was very active at the time. And much like kind of your circle of friends in New York right now, it was where a lot of nightclub and nightlife entertainment could sort of talk about behind the scenes anonymously about the bad gigs or bad managers or bad situations, and hold each other accountable. And so the Motherboards kind of serve that function that sort of like Facebook groups do today.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so, in terms of like Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake and the anger that really is coming from Britney Spears documentary. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts about this. It's not necessarily that Justin Timberlake apologized late, is that he did not have the wherewithal to come to Janet's defense at the time. And where he had the ability to do so, he chose not to.
Right. And also, words are great, but like, what is he doing to make up for the damage for that what he did? Like, what is he doing to help women, especially women in the media, especially Black women in the media? Like, you can talk all day, but if you're not doing something to help undo what you did or help counteract the acts that you, the action that you took to justify the apology in the first place, you're just blowing hot air as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's my job.
Kareem, what would you say to Justin Timberlake? I mean, he's, you know, he's not doing a lot of things right now.
He might be listening.
So he's just sitting at home listening to you talking about him.
I would say that he is in a great position to actually take action and write and do something for to make up for the action that he did. You know, that's what I'd say to Justin.
Because here at Feast of Fun, we don't believe cancel culture exists. Period.
Look, I am always here for redemption. Right. I'm always here for, okay, you fucked up. I would rather have you, especially a person of influence, learn a lesson and be on our side.
Mm. Right. And he has, you know, I think the best is yet to come. I think Justin Timberlake, you know, he wants to align himself with very progressive projects. I think he just did this film.
Yeah, he's playing something and people are like, oh, he's been a great LGBT ally. And people are like, who? What? When has Justin Timberlake ever been like a friend to the gay community? He's playing like a great, is he playing gay?
So it's a new film called Palmer that you can watch on Apple TV Plus. Justin Timberlake plays Eddie Palmer, a high school football star turned ex-con. After 12 years in prison, he returns home and moves in with his grandmother and discovers that his child is trans or non-binary.
Oh.
And so it's a tough talking father from prison who has to embrace their gender non-conforming child and what to do about it. And so people say it's an extraordinary film. And I think, you know, with Justin Timberlake, he is definitely somebody who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And has money, has influence, and has access. And I think, totally. You know, this gets me really excited because I think he is going to create opportunities for Black women to shine. Because Janet Jackson don't need his charity.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. She's got Rhythm Nation money.
Rhythm Nation, she's got Control, she's got Janet, she's holding up that velvet rope. Like, you know, financially she's good, but there's definitely work that needs to be done as far as righting the wrongs that Justin has done. And I'm excited to see him take advantage of that should he choose to do so.
Yeah, Britney Spears, she had a good week. She's doing really good. Her father now has to share control over her money with a neutral third party. It was ruled in court. And I'm like, well, if you want to solve your problems, Kareem, or anybody who's listening, just get Netflix to make a documentary about you.
Oh, that's it?
That's it.
I didn't know it was so easy. What I want to know is how did this man who was at the time barely in her life at all, from what, you know, the way they shaped it and everything, how was he able to gain control of her finances and career? Like, yeah, he's her father, but like, where the fuck was he until this all started happening? Like that by itself seems super fishy to me.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I haven't really watched the documentary yet, and I'm not sure exactly when he became in charge. I remember a few years ago or something like that, he was trying to switch conservatorship over her general affairs to somebody else. So I don't know how that all played in or where it's at.
Well, like the Mandalorian star, Gina Carano, the thick and muscular hero of the series, she is not coming back. Gina was let go from her role by Disney after repeated comparisons on social media to being a Republican Today to being a Jewish person during the Holocaust?
Completely parallel, obviously not. Like, what? How would you say that? Like, how are you in Hollywood and know all these Jewish people and say something that stupid about Jewish people? Like, even if you actually think it, like, what?
Yeah, it's
crazy to me.
Well, you know, the Republican, they're conservative, their thinking is very narrow, and they like to portray themselves as the victim. And, you know, she's got a victim mentality. And maybe
you
she
know,
also
another
knew that,
thing they stole from black people, because black people have always been trendy. You know, we've been complaining about our oppression, and they're like, we want to be oppressed too. It's understandable. They did it with country music. They did it with rock music, like all of that. So yeah, whatever.
But with Gina, Jon Favreau, the director of the series, and by the way, Jon can basically do whatever he wants because he's single-handedly saving Star Wars for Disney, who wrote a big fat check to George Lucas and then said, oh my God, don't cash the check. You know, and so they're stuck with this franchise. You know, a lot of those movies were bombs. People are like, what the fuck is this bullshit? You know, and I think they still made money. The guy, John Boyega, said, you know, the whole franchise thing is super racist. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
They destroyed my character. There's potential with my character, and they just cut the legs out from underneath it.
He was supposed to be a black stormtrooper who was force sensitive and became a Jedi.
Yeah.
And instead, they just threw his character out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And this is why, like, finding the balance between art and commerce is so hard, because you want to make something that's quality, but also, we got to sell these t-shirts. We got to sell these mugs.
Right? Which brings us to, well, before we move on. And so anyways, Jon Favreau, I guess Gina has been doing this all along, right? And cancel culture is the idea that, you know, once you do one wrong move, that's the end of it.
Or you don't agree with what I say, then you I'm know. Canceled. Yeah.
And part of it is, like, Gina all this time has been, you know, very combative, very hostile publicly against, you know, the very people that she's working with and the very values of the projects she's involved with. And so, you know, Disney has given her a lot of chances, and Jon Favreau said, like, I really believe in this performer, and please keep her in my series, which makes me question Jon Favreau's, you know, wisdom. And so they said, okay, let's bring her back for the second season. And then she just, like, kept going. And so part of me is, like, cancel culture is really adult accountability. It's when you walk away from being able to listen to a situation like that, you know?
Facing consequences will make her rethink what the hell she's saying and what the hell she's thinking,
right,
and actually, like I said, like, take action to right what she's done.
And maybe she will, you know, it's like, maybe she have a,
there was potential for that character. You know, she was a strong female, character. And, I was, you know, I enjoyed her presence on the show, and so I was very, very, very disappointed to see that she held these kinds of beliefs.
And so that,
well, hey, Lucy Lawless said, hey, I'm available.
And Lucy looks great. Now, what I love about Lucy too is, like, you know, she was from the same franchise as Hercules with that Kevin Sorbo. And he, you know, you think this woman from Mandalorian is terrible. Gina's terrible. Kevin Sorbo is even worse. I mean, he is a douchebag turned up the nozzle till 10 to 11. And did I just come up with that? The nozzle till 11? That's great. The douchebag turned up the nozzle till 11. And he is, you know, because he's very, like, arch conservative, and just he's rallying against cancel culture all the time. But he's had terrible ideas for a long time. And that's too bad, because, you know, I loved Hercules, and he's the local Chicago guy. And then he's just, it's so disappointing.
Hercules.
I mean, guys with big muscles and perfect bodies always have great ideas. So I wonder what's going on with him and what makes him so different.
Thank you. What is up with athletes and their, like, right-wing concern, like Caitlyn Jenner, Scott Herman? You know, you guys heard him on the podcast. This year,
he came
out as a Trump Republican conservative supporter. And I was like, what is in your mind is wrong? Like, I'm like, I'm your friend. I'm like, he's probably the closest person that I know other than, you know, crazy family members, which I don't talk to. But like, he's somebody who, you know, came on this podcast, had a beautiful message of inclusivity and diversity and fighting for the underdog.
And for people that don't know, I'm familiar with him. He was on Real World Brooklyn, right?
Yes.
And he became famous because there was a trans woman on the show who had just had some surgery, and he gave her a check because, you know, she was like, it's financially difficult, and he just wrote her a check. And so he became a darling of the trans world. They're just like, sugar daddy, come my way.
And, mama needs a new pair of titties.
And, you know, he's got his own set of titties from his muscles, you know.
Well, and Scott Herman is like my generation's Jack LaLanne. He put together amazing tutorial videos on bodybuilding and weightlifting and taught a whole generation of mostly, you know, queer people how to lift weights.
Mm-hmm. And I really hope he changes his heart. You know?
And I said to him, it's like, why are you aligning yourself with some of the darkest, most saddest, most harmful political forces? You know, it's just antithetical to your own values as a human being. It's like, it just, to me, and I'm like, it's just, it's this idea that athletes, when they win the race, they only did it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're going to be on trend, like, be on time with it. Like, this is the equivalent of getting into bootcut jeans now. Like, you're really late on this trend, bro. Like, years late. Trump is out, literally.
Mm. Well, the Republicans don't think so. You know, they voted like, to keep him.
He could run again.
Well, we'll look,
see. We'll see.
I mean, a little silver lining on that was there were a couple of GOP politicians. I know Nikki Haley spoke out against Trump, and Marco Rubio did recently, which really surprised me. I mean, they're still Republicans and they're still working against us, but at least they had that sense to be able to say that, because they weren't saying that a year ago.
Yeah. And even Mitch McConnell was just like, he's guilty, but he's out of office. What can we do?
Oh, God.
Well, if it doesn't take getting your life threatened to make you speak out against a person plotting your death, I don't know what will.
Exactly. Like, they were coming for blood, literally. So
what a wuss Mike Pence is. I mean, he didn't even swat a fly.
Oh, mother.
So let's talk about our main story here today and why we're having Kareem on the show. You did this really great thread on your social media talking about Gottmik, RuPaul's Drag Race contestant on season 13 of the series.
Yes.
Gottmik is making waves, you know, by being a very fierce drag performer and, you know, fashion and makeup designer on their own right. Of course, it helps that you went to an expensive, you know, fashion school in Los Angeles. And you probably have either your family paid for it, or you have student loans that you better win RuPaul's Drag Race, because otherwise you're going to be in debt for the rest of your life.
And that's really real.
Maybe they got a scholarship.
These days, anybody will tell you, even with a scholarship, you go to one of those expensive art schools, and I'll tell you from firsthand experience, you're going to be paying for it for the rest of your life. Now,
quite literally,
Gottmik is making waves on the show and on social media. He is putting out a T-shirt that a lot of people don't understand the context of. And it's a shirt with Gottmik's chest showing top surgery scars. And anybody can buy the shirt and wear it. And it is a commentary on the Vivienne Westwood Malcolm McLaurin shirt that was sold in their store called Sex many years ago, which was that it was a knockoff of a very popular design of the time.
Well, it may have been knocked off of a T-shirt that was called the No Bra Look that was created by a company called Jizz. I like that. which was founded by Janus and Laura Gottwade. And they feel that that those people, you know, Vivienne Westwood or McLaren, they saw their T-shirt at one of like this exposition where they were at, and maybe got the idea from there. But there's also somebody who, even before them from the 70s, also had that same kind of like idea of a T-shirt that had breasts on it.
And so I'm going to call you Marshall. Kareem. Kareem, what do you make of like Gottmik's shirt? And mostly like, you know, the public reaction or confusion over what the shirt represents and what Gottmik's trying to say with it.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, I mean, for I'm afraid, can I just interject real quick, is for people that aren't quite understanding what it is, you know, as far as the top surgery goes, because we do have a lot of international listeners and maybe some people whose language isn't, first language is English, is this is the removal of, you know,
breast tissue
and then the scar is underneath it. And it's a typical procedure that trans men have.
Right. And, you know, not a trans man myself, so I'm speaking from, you know, the perspective of a cis person who some of my best friends are trans men, you know, literally. But, you know, when I first saw, I think that night on the runway, Gottmik had worn the little black dress where only the crotch was covered. So the crotch and the ass were covered with tiny black dresses, and then he had nipple pasties on, and that was the outfit with some heels. Being familiar with stories and accounts of trans people and what they go through with body dysphoria, I thought it was just really iconic that Gottmik got out on that stage on national TV wearing that little and showing that much of his body in front of someone who said that trans people have an unfair advantage because of their bodies in a competition like RuPaul's Drag Race.
Wasn't that a gag? Wasn't that a gag? Right?
Yeah.
Now that you pointed out, I'm like, oh man, it's like, you know, talk about a fuck you to RuPaul right on their own show.
Well, if you watch RuPaul's face in that, it's very, I don't know if that's the real reaction that she gave, but the reaction that they showed, because they do edit those shows and you sometimes get a reaction that the producer wants you to see. It was a very kind of stoic, like, okay, what is this here?
Yeah, I don't want to get canceled.
Very Ross Matthews with the crafty comment.
Yeah. And you know, it's brave and it's courageous and it's a great concept for that little black dress, and it's a way to just kind of really put it all out there.
Totally. It's something that I would want to do, but it wouldn't have as much impact because I'm not a trans man. You know, oh, it's a almost naked dude on stage. Like, there's nothing revolutionary about that.
Yeah. You know, a forefront of that kind of stuff, too, is like if you go on YouTube, and for years now, there's been so many trans men like documenting their top surgery and showing like the scars and the liquid being like the, because you have to put things in there for the to drain out and whatnot. And it's just like, it's been remarkable. And I'm sure for, you know, a young trans person watching that has just got to be like, oh, this is what it's like. This is a possibility. This is how my life can be. Whereas, you know, generations before would just be like, you know, live in shame and be like, oh, my God, I hate these things. What am I going to do? And now it's like, here's a bright future for you.
Right. And sometimes what you don't see, which is good that these people are documenting their story, is the recovery process from that, because it's weeks and weeks of changing bandages and drainage tubes and not being able to fully use your arms. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't lift your arms above your shoulders for like weeks. It's a very, very involved recovery process. Yeah. The scars can be on the chest can be a symbol of pride, but it can also be, it can point you out as not like the other men. So if you're not out as a trans person, it can be a very jarring experience to be somewhere like a locker room or a changing room. Even Gottmik talked about it on the first episode where he was hesitating to change in front of the other contestants, I believe.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the song, they put it, you know, out there and didn't let him come out as trans himself. But
yeah,
he came out with the next day with merch. That was the t-shirt that you described with the his chest showing the scars on the chest of a t-shirt, disembodied from his head or any context, just a close up of his chest, nipples, scars, which, you know, obviously a badge of honor for his journey and where he is now and his acceptance of his body. So the question that I posed, because, you know, I'm friends with a number of trans people on Facebook.
And Rue Girls, too. You're part of the House of Davenport.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so I really wanted to see what trans people were feeling, but I was interested in seeing what cis people were feeling about it. So I said, what does it say for a cis man to wear this shirt? and possibly go out into the world where people have no context and just have these scars of a trans person on a t-shirt. And a lot of cis people responded that it was a sign of support, that it would start important conversations, and you know, things in that vein. And later on, a few trans men actually responded. And one of my friends, Jax Coyote, he said, as a trans man myself, this is my opinion. I'm not on board. I guess every trans person feels differently about it. I embrace my scars, but I don't think I would turn it into merch because I just don't feel right having people wear something that I fought so hard for. Even if it's out of support, there are other ways to support me, but that's my opinion. A number of other trans people basically express similar things. He doesn't speak for all trans men. This is AJ Matoli. He doesn't speak for all trans men. He certainly doesn't speak for me. His t-shirts are going to trigger a lot of us. Sigh. I was hoping I would wake up on board, because he commented, went to sleep, and then woke back up. I woke up more upset by it. And so there was a lot of discussion. Dina Delicious chimed in. She said, the scars of the trans community do not belong on a t-shirt, period. This will not spark any positive conversations. I've said this a million times. We are not our bodies. And she put, we are not our bodies in all caps with 4 exclamation points. And a bunch of the trans people that were on the thread commented in support of it. So it was interesting to see just sort of the span of responses and how people felt about it and how people responded after they heard from people who were the most affected by it, which, you know, in my mind, going through top surgery is not a struggle that I face. And so before I speak on it, I should say, hey, you that this actually affects, what do you have to say about it? Right. What is it that it's going to put you through? What's your experience with this? And form my opinion and my stance from there. Same thing with, you know, any trans issue, issues with women, issues with people of color, anybody that faces a sort of oppression or some kind of struggle that you do not share, it makes sense to say, hey, what's your perspective on this before I have anything to say about it?
Right.
Well, what is your, you know, the shirt is a commentary on the original Vivienne Westwood Sex Pistols t-shirt, which was a commentary on the anti-bra feminist movement, right? So it was meant to be in support of women who did not want to wear bras.
It was also just meant to be shocking.
And it's meant shocking to be shocking, yes. But the original intent was that, and then it got evolved. Right. It permutated. You know,
and with the Sex Pistols, it became a punk kind of thing. And then when I saw this, the first thing in my mind I said to myself is like, that's very punk, you know?
Yes.
It's meant to be shocking. It's meant to be outrageous.
It's drag.
Who can wear it? Why they want to wear it? That's all questionable, you know?
It's a hard shirt. Even if you're in support of this, this is a hard shirt to wear.
Fausto had a shirt that he made in the 1990s that it said, cock is cool.
Well, let me explain the history of this. Okay. So Kurt Cobain famously was an LGBT ally in a time period that is very costly and difficult to be an LGBT ally. He certainly aligned himself and offered Nirvana's appearances in a lot of RuPaul's specials, and was a big fan of RuPaul. And there's a very famous photo of Kurt Cobain, Courtney, and their baby Frances Bean, I believe, and RuPaul backstage, and RuPaul's holding Kurt and Courtney.
Baby.
What the hell's her name?
Frances Bean, who later on became Courtney a judge on RuPaul's Drag Race.
So there's this, you know, really interesting history there. And so, you know, he said when he was told, "Hey, shut up, faggot," or you know, he would hear gay slurs during his concerts. He would stop the show and say, "Hey, man, this is the '90s. Cock is cool." So we were like in love with Kurt Cobain. It was heartbreaking when he died. And so me and my friends, including Alton Delaney from that reality.
Wrap It Up.
The great wrap up on YouTube and some other famous artists. We took our clothes off and we posed in, covered ourselves in rainbow paint and did a shirt called Cock Is Cool. And we're naked on it.
Oh, my
God. And that shirt, one of the best-selling shirts I ever sold, no one wears it.
And then his friend Kurthy says, that's a hard T-shirt to wear. Because, you know, it's got Faust's penis on it. Now, eventually, we had
emphasis.
We had some in stock, and so these were like 15-year-old T-shirts or something like that. We put them on. I think at that point in time, we only had like five or six left. So he's like,
wait, what's the website? Feastoffun.com?
It's no longer available.
It's no longer for sale, and the original designs have been destroyed because it was done at a time when, you know, digital archives was very hard to do.
But we ended up selling like the last four or five for like $80. So it was great. So they're out there. Somebody has them.
And they do show up like from time to time.
Where were we?
We were in Pride Parade marching down the street. I'm like, that's my dick. And the guy's like, no, it's not, asshole. And I'm like, that's me. That's me. And he's like, sure you are.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, because that shirt was made in 1995. And I saw that shirt at a Pride Parade in, 2010. Like a decade later, 20 years later.
Somebody must have bought it for him from the website and they gave it to him.
And I'm just like, and this happens to me all the time. I will see one of our designs out, you know, because we do a lot of shirts and some of the shirts that we've sold have sold very, very well. And we've not been on RuPaul's Drag Race.
And just to clear that up.
Yeah.
You get our not shaving leaves more time for misbehaving at our store, feastofun.com/store.
And I'll be out, and maybe you've experienced this too. You know, you'll see a design that you made out in the wild. And you're like, it's like running into a child, an old friend. And you're like, oh, my God, thank you so much for buying that shirt. I love, you know, I'm so glad. And the person looks at you, and they're like, you're insane. Get away from me.
Oh, that has never happened to me. I do not have merch at the moment, but I will definitely look out for that. But Fausto, I mean, that seems like there would be demand still for that shirt. I think if you have lost the original design, the only solution is to take some more naked pictures now and make some new T-shirts. I think that would really be what your community really needs from you right now.
I will only do it if you do it with me. And we all full frontal.
Ooh.
Let's get together and make this up. And we have to cover ourselves in paint to do we have to do a progress flag rainbow.
You know what? Let me marinate on this because I am not totally against the idea of being in a room naked with you. So, yeah.
Whereas most people are. Put some clothes on.
Okay, so back to Gottmik.
Yeah, and the punk T-shirts. That's so, very challenging.
Oh, right.
That's art, though, baby.
This is art, you know? And the thing about RuPaul's Drag Race, and I can understand now, and we've understood this, right? The producers and RuPaul understand that this show is a machine to make underground artists into the mainstream, to launch them into the mainstream. And sometimes the world isn't ready for it, and a backlash can get really, really ugly.
Definitely.
And certainly, you know, we know that some of our worst allies are other LGBTQ people.
Very much so.
And you
look at that fandom.
Yeah, and so look at the fandom, right? And so, you know, I do feel from observing and from having received that negativity that some of the criticism against Gottmik's shirt is totally legitimate, yet at the same time, it does not come from a sincere, honest place where jealousy is not a factor there. And so part of it is like, how dare you merchandise and capitalize on my pain and suffering, but, you know, what we really are fighting for to some degree is to be seen as equals. The problem here is capitalism, not the desire for equality.
And, you know, a lot of people were saying, I would buy the T-shirt to support Gottmik, but I wouldn't wear it. And I wouldn't wear it out, which makes a lot of sense to me.
Did you buy it? Did you? Because, part of it is like, you could frame that and put it in your house, and that would be an amazing work of art to have in your, you know, your S&M room.
Put it on a pillow.
Put it on a pillow, yeah.
And that would be a very different context because you could, it would be a conversation piece where you would build context around it and talk about it. And it wouldn't just be like, hey, look at, you know, these, this trans man on my t-shirt that like I'm wearing to the gym. Like, you know, that would be a very different context that I think would make a lot more sense for something as significant as that.
And I think, you know, with Gottmik's skills, undoubtedly with fashion and makeup are superb. And the producers of the show breaking into this space, which they, you know, arguably should have broken in at the very beginning of the series, not at this point. Certainly, you know, are very lucky that they found a contestant like Gottmik, who clearly is going to be making it, if not to the top five, to the top three.
Oh, like... Think?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, come on. I wasn't born yesterday.
You never know. It's one acting challenge away from getting booted. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's see how Gottmik does in the Snatch game.
I think we'll see Gottmik in the top three. Although I didn't see this week's episode, but not exactly keeping up as strong as he started, but I think he's got a few more tricks up his sleeve. So I think it's a very strong possibility that we'll see Gottmik in the top three.
And part of me too, you know, what I like about Gottmik and what's is that it's fucking with everybody.
And it's not fucking with me.
Well, it's not fucking. Well, the thing about it is, you know, RuPaul loves anarchy.
Yes.
is at RuPaul's core is, I know he's a capitalist who owns, you know, oil wells and stuff like that, or is, you know, profiting from them, allegedly.
Possibly fracking.
Possibly fracking. But in, you know, in his core, in his values, he also loves, you know, tinkering with things.
He wants to, you know, wake people up is what he wants to. He wants to, you know, be like, shock you into like what is happening in this world.
He's a rebel just for kicks, man. He's been doing it since 1966.
I mean, he even wore the rebel flag as a dress. So appropriate verbiage.
Rachel Tensions from Tu Wong Fu. Thanks for everything. Love, Julie Newmar.
And that's, you know, why we're so fascinated and on this podcast, and we don't dismiss RuPaul as just another, you know, money grubbing Hollywood type, is because, you know, in some regards, RuPaul can't be dismissed because there's a desire for RuPaul to mess with the system.
Right. And RuPaul has been a huge activist for the gay community and for, you know, like for decades, has broken down all types of barriers and stuff like that. I'm not going to say she hasn't misspoken a few times, you know, like I'm not going to say I'm 100% behind everything she says, but her positive impact on the gay community through her work in the media is undeniable. Mm-hmm. And also that land in Wyoming, I'm pretty sure belongs to her husband and she kind of married into it. So not saying, you know, not saying she's any kind of angel, but it's not like she's out there drilling.
Yeah, it's not like she owns 51% of that company.
Exactly. Don't fuck with her, fellas.
But what about Raven and Greta Thunberg?
Wait, what happened?
Remember, you know who Greta Thunberg is, right? This like 16, 17-year-old Swedish girl, or maybe she's 16 now, who fought against environmental... You know, she's an environmentalist, right?
And a master of Twitter shade, too,
And a master of Twitter shade, yes. And then Raven was just one day just had a salty, salty video where she was just like basically tearing into this poor little 16-year-old girl. Like, who the hell do you think you are? Blah, 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 blah. You're just a little brat traveling around like in a first class of a train or whatever, that kind of thing. And I'm just like, it was so unbecoming because like, here's like, how old's Raven? Like 47 years old at this point in time. Or near 40, and you're picking on a little girl. It just seems
who's trying to save the environment.
And then I'm just like, so it always, every now and then I would think about it, and then I was just like, wait a second, why would she have that opinion? Did RuPaul give her that opinion because of the whole fracking thing?
Well, because Raven hangs out a lot with RuPaul doing hour-long makeup sessions.
Yeah.
And so RuPaul's like, "Ooh, dude, Greta Thunberg, I'm going after my fracking money. Why the little brat, you know?" And then she comes over and she's like, "Yeah, RuPaul's right."
That's what we do here on the podcast screen. We put all the little pieces together and then we figure out what's really going on and who murdered drag.
Who, there's a cork poster board with red string.
Oh, wow. And post-it notes everywhere.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm black and white photos, clippings from newspapers. Oh, hey, and one of RuPaul's friends just recently died. It was Ari Gold, musician. RuPaul just tweeted out, "Until we meet again, dear friend, Sir Ari Gold, love always, Ru." Did you happen to know Ari being on the club scene?
Not personally. He would be, I think he performed at the Glam Awards and he was like nominated for the Glams, like when, for those not from New York City, the Glam Awards are the Gay Nightlife Awards where the nightlife people nominate and vote for each other in a closed ecosystem and then have a big ceremony, usually in January. There's a lot of huge performances, usually, you know, now that New York girls are always on Drag Race, usually it's hosted by one or two of the Drag Race girls. Tina Burner hosted it this year online. They did an online show for this year. And so I remember seeing him nominated for, you know, Best Musical Artist or Best Video when I first started in nightlife. Years ago, probably 7-8 years ago. I would see him on flyers when I first moved to the city. And then a few years ago, I would see him. He was go-go dancing at the Cock, not on my night, but I saw him on some of the advertisements. And so he's been, I mean, I know him as a distant New York City legend.
Yeah. He's been a guest on this podcast. I met him because I used to go to the LGBT convention in New York City at the Javits Center. And that was the big queer convention before Drag Race came. Before Drag Cane came. And he was, you know, just there at a booth, you know, selling his CDs. I walked over to him. I started talking to him. And then I invited him to come on the podcast. And he was super sweet and very nice. And we talked about
playful.
And very playful, talked about his career. And then during our research for the show, we had discovered that as a child, he sang the theme song to My Buddy the Doll. Like, My Buddy. Steph, how do you sing it?
My Buddy. Well, why don't you just play it?
Okay.
My buddy, wherever I go, he goes. My buddy, I'll teach him everything that I know. My buddy and me, like the climb up a tree. My buddy and me, where the best friends could be. My buddy
and me.
My buddy. From Play School.
Yes,
My buddy.
Wow.
Everybody wanted a My Buddy when we were little kids. Maybe not. I probably was a little too old at that point in time. But, you know, of course, there was a catchy lingo. And he was,
well,
you know,
My Buddy was a doll that was marketed to boys.
Yes. And I think
only gay boys wanted that doll.
Yeah. And specifically, I think when they first came up with the concept, it was for kids with like special needs.
Yes,
wanted
correct.
It for boys.
For emoting.
For emoting, that kind of stuff. And, you know, he would talk about it with us and stuff like that, but he definitely, that was not something he wanted to be like known for, you know what I mean? Because, you know, that's in some ways it's an equivalency of being like a child star. And
well,
so,
he was a child star. Yeah. He did a lot of voices for the Cabbage Patch Kids cartoons. He was in a regular on CBS Children's Potbelly Bear, which is a series on Saturday morning. I don't remember that one, but he also hit one of his best appearances later on as a teenager was in the Gem and the Hologram cartoons.
Oh. No, his best performance was playing Tyrone Cohen in Star Booty. And I believe he was the guy who was the Hasidic Orthodox Jewish person who was really into having RuPaul fart in his face. Because RuPaul was undercover as, you know, Star Booty was undercover as Cupcake.
My name's Cupcake.
What's yours?
What's yours?
And she was an undercover sex worker, and she'd get in the car with him and then just fart in his face.
Are you sure that was Ari Gold?
Why not? There is a scene in that movie with that. I think it's him.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That fetish is known as, like, if you have a fetish for smells, it's called olfactophilia. And specifically, if you're into farting, it's a eprocotophilia, something like that. Yeah.
See, and so you didn't think you were going to learn something new today.
And so there's people that really, they just want to, and part of it, you know, it's a submission kind of thing is what they figure. It's like, you want to be humiliated and you want to be disgusted by somebody farting.
But those sound like him.
Awful drag names. God.
Olfactophilia and eprocotophilia.
The House of Philia.
Oh, but I think, you know, Ari Gold won RuPaul over because he also was a backup vocalist for Diana Ross.
Oh.
So
it all comes back to Miss Ross.
It sure does.
Diana Ross is in my poster board is in the center
of RuPaul's world.
And everything.
all the strings Ross connect to everything. Her.
RuPaul, Lady Bunny loves to tell the story of when she lived in Atlanta. She'd walk around, she'd see around town, and RuPaul would make Xerox. She'd probably go to the Kinko's or whatever they had back then.
Photocopy stores.
And photograph RuPaul's face, and it said, "RuPaul is everything." And it was a base. It was a ripoff of Diana Ross, because Diana Ross, I guess, had the same kind of thing with her face.
She had an ad campaign. Yeah,
Diana Ross is everything.
But see, the thing about RuPaul is he was very clever. He was very tall, and then he wore like roller skates or anything like to make him even taller. And he would put it on the top of telephone poles,
so people couldn't get at it.
That's right. They couldn't tear him down.
That's smart. I'm gonna have to do that with my flyers on Fire Island. Boom.
So Lady Bunny would just have to crawl up there to tear those things down.
And that's why Lady Bunny can crawl up to the ceiling like the Rain Girl.
I would subscribe to an OnlyFans of Lady Bunny just trying to climb up things. Like $10.90, take my money. Take my money.
You know, Lady Bunny is not monetizing the weird factor enough, in my opinion. Like that video of her teasing Jesse with a little doggy treat is one of the funniest things.
It's probably her best work. Jesse is our dog. If you go to YouTube, just search Lady Bunny and dog. I mean, it might be just her that comes up, but if you scroll down, it'll be actually her with another dog.
Not
the one with her with Jackie Beat, and not the one that she's with Sherry Vine or with Coco Peru, but it's like a real, our dog, Jesse.
Yeah. Not Lady Bunny is a dog.
Yes.
I thought y'all were talking about some S&M shit. I was like, oh, okay, they put that on YouTube.
When we did our cooking with drag queens, after we ate, Jesse, like, oh, give Jesse a little treat. And she took this little bone that we give to Jesse, little rawhide, and she teased him with it for like 10 minutes. Like, what you see, that's the last 5 minutes of it. You know? Like, it went on forever.
Well, it's also interesting.
Please do not edge our dog. Please do not edge our dog.
Well, the thing about it is, too, is like Lady Bunny was a spokesperson for PETA, people for the ethical treatment of animals.
Because she's a pig and she didn't want to get eaten.
And she's like, you don't want to be a meat eater. Do you know how expensive, you know, the impact on the planet is eating meat? You should go vegan. And she's trying to convince a dog to go vegan. Funniest thing. I think one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. It really is a work of art. Mm. You know, I just happen to be there. Wow.
I would love to see somebody from Chattanooga, Tennessee, turn down a plate of ribs. That's all I got to say.
For sure.
It's not impossible, but I'd like to see it.
That never happens.
So I'll repost the Ari Gold show for folks if they want to listen to it. And but yeah, it's rest in peace, Ari Gold. He, you know, I followed him, his career for a long time, and especially like on social media, and he had a long struggle with leukemia in and out of the hospital, and I was hoping he'd been doing better, but unfortunately he died just, I believe, a day after his birthday. His birthday was the 11th, and I believe he died on the 12th. So
yeah, I saw a bunch of people on my timeline posting about his birthday. We have like friends in common on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so then I saw, I believe it was Mila Jam, whose post I saw first. And I was like, wait, weren't they just talking about, oh, it was his birthday and he died? Wow. Like the day after his birthday, blew my mind.
Poor guy. Let's talk about Tessica.
Oh, better known as the... So it's Jessica with the T for terrible choices.
That was a Messica. That's what that was.
I don't know if it was a terrible choice or not.
So Tessica is best known as the Gorilla Glue Girl.
Yes.
Who reached internet fame for using Gorilla Glue to glue her hair extensions down?
To lay her edges.
No, it's her own hair.
Yeah. And Kareem, will you explain to the listeners? Because a lot of white folks out there might not understand what laying one's edges means.
Mark, I have been waiting for literal days to hear you say the word laying her edges. And wow, I'm going to have to change my underwear. Thank you.
Why does that turn you on so much?
Wow. It's just like, it's like listening to your dad rap. Like, it's just so just out of context and just so cute and just
listen,
adorable.
I have become obsessed with baby hairs in the past year.
Why?
Because like when you go online or these TikToks or these beauty videos, especially with these African-American women and ethnic women for the most part, and then you see some white women trying to get on it too, they take the little soft hairs at the edges. Like your niece Victoria, who's Puerto Rican, she has like little baby hairs on the back of her neck and on her forehead. She doesn't lay them or anything like that, right? But she does stuff with them, I guess, something like that. But they kind of make design. Well, Kareem, you just tell Fausto about the baby hair and about laying of the
this
edges.
This is the hair of my niece's, but yeah. Go ahead.
So,
do men lay edges?
It
typically
depends. As the African American ambassador to the Feast of Fun show,
yes.
Welcome.
Yeah,
self-appointed.
So. Typically, when women get their hair relaxed, it's a chemical straightening process that is actually very involved with their hair. And so a lot of times it can cause breakage, especially if you don't take a lot of care to moisturize and take care of your hair on a regular basis. And so when you have breakage around the edge of your hairline, they call those edges. And so the hair around the edge of your hairline tends to be shorter than the rest of your hair. For example, if you pull your hair into a ponytail, the hair around your hairline a lot of times won't make it to the ponytail and it'll stick out because it's not long enough to be gathered into the ponytail. So a solution for this...
I like that, yes.
So a solution for this is, instead of just having them poke out any old way, is to get some gel and... A lot of times you get a toothbrush too, and you can make curl patterns or designs and just lay them down on your forehead so that they are not unruly. And so that's what they call laying your edges. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, men don't relax their hair or don't wear their hair long enough to have edges that they need to lay down. Or if they do grow their hair out, a lot of times they'll go to the barber and get it what they call a tape or a lineup. And so they just basically buzz off those hairs that are too long to make it to the ponytail. That's usually what men do. But now, things are a little more gender fluid in certain cultures. And so you might see some men with some laid edges.
And some people are criticized because they're taking those adult hairs and pretending like they're baby hairs, too. Because baby hairs are usually soft and wispy, naturally kind of like soft and wispy.
So intentionally styling the hair to look like
it's baby hair, but those things are thick. And if you get clocked, the bitches will come for you, right?
Well, I haven't heard too much about that. I have heard more.
Just Google it and you'll be like, dear women, quit trying to make regular adult human hair into baby hair. It's just,
I'll tell you a story with my niece Victoria. Her hair is very similar to the Kardashian girls, which I won't say on the show what words they use to describe it because I think it's harmful. But Victoria, at her young age, she had some misgivings about it. And I said to her, it's like, this is where your soul lives. This is the most delicate, sensitive parts of your hair. And it's the most beautiful. And to want to get rid of it or to feel like it's something bad, it's like the whiskers on your cat. It's how you get sensitivity to the world around you. And it's the most precious part of you that makes you so unique and beautiful and special. And please don't ever. And she's like, yeah.
As young people are prone to do when older people try to give them advice, you know.
Well, that's I just want to impress upon her that, you know, you're beautiful and I love you. And please don't. You're perfect just the way you are. Please don't feel like you have to deeply change something about you. That's one of the most beautiful things about you. You know, it's like, and that's the thing about like women of, you know, rich melanin or of other ethnicities other than Caucasian, is that they tend to sometimes be put in a position where they're questioning their humanity or their beauty because it doesn't fit into somebody else's standards.
And to speak on that, a lot of Black women end up with edges because of the process of relaxing, which comes from a beauty standard of Black people being considered not beautiful or not acceptable or unkempt or unprofessional when they wear their hair how it naturally grows out of their head. And so they damage their hair in order to fit a more white standard. Mm-hmm. And so when white women and white drag queens wear wigs with baby hairs, it's like, that's not a struggle that you face. So why are you trying to take the style that comes from that struggle? And so that's why it can be controversial when drag queens that aren't people of color take on that aesthetic, almost like, you know, wearing cornrows or wearing braids or something like that. Like, those are Black protective styles that we embrace as a reaction to how we deal with white culture and how we deal with those rules being imposed on us.
Mm. And so Gorilla Glue Girl, legend.
All she wanted to do was lay her edges. They weren't laying, and she picked up the stuff and said, Gorilla Glue.
She had run out of the got to be glued hairspray.
Yes. Which I use for wigs because Vivacious told me that's the one you want to use. Because Fausto was like, oh, it doesn't matter what you use. Just use the Aquanet. And Vivacious
like, I like Aquanet. All we had was Aquanet. And we liked it.
Aquanet is a classic.
Yeah, but Vivacious is like, you cannot use Aquanet. It's got to be good. I was like, is this the one? And she's like, yes.
And she barely even wears wigs. You can also use an 8-track, but we have better things now. So,
and so, you know, she wanted to. So she ran out of it. She had this stuff in the house, and it was like, let me try it, put it on, and then a month later, she's like, it's not coming out.
But it's not all over her head. It was just around the edges.
It was on her hairline, right?
Okay, because in my mind, I'm thinking this is a disaster. You know?
Oh no, it was her whole scalp.
Mm. So it was not just one little area, is the entire head.
Because on the video, she runs her nails across it and she's like, it's like a helmet. Yeah. And so she did it. She didn't like do it on her face or anything, but she had put her hair in a ponytail. Yeah. And so to keep all the hair in place and to make sure it was laid, she, instead of hairspray, got the Gorilla Glue and which, when I heard that, like, I won't even put Weave Bond on my lashes because I'm allergic to every fucking thing. Like, I won't even use generic lash glue because I'm like, I don't know if this stuff is going to break me out. Where's my white duo? And so when I heard that, I was absolutely shocked that she would have made that choice.
But. And it's amazing that she got, you know, everybody just kind of reacted. I mean, we all like to laugh at people when they make mistakes and stuff like that. But it really blew up.
Yeah. I mean, she also made this mistake and went on the internet and made a video about it. So,
yeah.
So that does sort of open yourself up to commentary.
And so you were saying that, you know, people are just being super harsh on her to a point that it is stemming from some kind of prejudice.
Well, I mean, in essence, what she was doing was putting on a straight ponytail onto her relaxed hair.
Yeah.
And that probably wouldn't have been an issue if there was more of a standard. And now, like, you know, natural styles are more in vogue, but a lot of times in certain areas, you'll get made fun of as a Black person, especially a Black woman, if you don't have, you know, the latest relaxer, or if your new growth is coming in and it's a little kinky or whatever. And one of the things you can do is, if you don't have time to, or the money to get a relaxer just yet, you can get a few more days out of it if you just gel it down and pull it back, you know, and make sure it's sprayed and glued down. So in a roundabout way, it is a reaction to being a Black woman and having white standards imposed, beauty standards imposed on you. So there's that to consider.
So it all had a happy ending because now she's the brand ambassador for Gorilla Glue. I'm just kidding. No, she had a, I guess, a plastic surgeon
in Beverly Hills.
In Beverly Hills, pay for using a special solvent to remove all the glue from her scalp, and she's good as new.
It was some kind of special solvent and aloe vera to kind of just get everything together. And yeah, he got it off.
But I think she should, you know, get some money out of this, or, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, get a gig or
Gorilla Glue. I certainly hope so.
Yeah. You know, this is marketing. Cause you know, look, all the drag queens want a good adhesive to glue those rhinestones on their dresses. And man, is Gorilla Glue not marketing on this? They're missing a chance.
Yeah, I mean, Got to Be is the one. Their sales are probably up. Gorilla Glue sales are definitely up. I would be hard pressed to hear that their sales aren't up with all this press that they're getting. They were trending for days. Mm-hmm. But like, Got to Be, they should totally make a campaign with this woman. Like, yeah, why not empower a woman of color in a very public way? There's no reason not to.
E6000, that's what I use to glue rhinestones to dresses and costumes.
It's the industry standard from what I know.
That's right, baby. You want to look like $1 million? E6000 will get you there.
Yeah, if you're wearing some H&M fashion. Gotta put some rhinestones on and some glitter. Unless it's Old Navy, then it's fine, just the way it is.
RuPaul said she doesn't want to see any fucking H&M, but then the part that people leave out is, but if you do, make sure you rhinestone it and make it something special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I do feel like H&M's brand is affordable fashion.
Disposable fashion.
Well, and disposable fashion, right? And also that appeals to, you know, queer, urban, you know, fashion forward people, thin people. Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if this was a marketing campaign in stealth mode.
Like, she's being paid by Old Navy here in the United States, but because she's over in the UK, it's a little H&M money.
Yeah.
Because H&M's more European brand, right? Yeah.
If I were a creative director, I would totally be into, like, okay, let's get a major platform to diss our product, mm-hmm. and then see if it makes us, if it gives enough buzz to make our sales go up.
Mm. I mean, you know, the thing about it is, right? With H&M is I just don't fit into any of their clothes.
Yeah, it's hard when you get when your shoulders get thick
and juicy, honey.
But I have a little black long sleeve shirt that I've had, you know, it's very basic. But it's like a poly blend or something like that. And I've had it for years and I love it. And I just throw it on and throw something on with it. And I'm ready to go.
Speaking of a similar brand, have you guys, being in the windy city, I know it gets cold as hell in Chicago, have y'all tried Uniqlo's long johns, their long underwear?
No, I haven't. What are they made out of? What's the fabric?
It's made out of unicorn blubber or something, because I didn't even get the heavy duty one. They got like different grades. And so I got the medium one. I was like, let's try out medium. Why not? Mm. That is the most insulating. Like, I have never had long johns that warm before. Oh my God.
You know what's really long? I used to have some silk ones. Those were very, very warm. Silk is so insulating. And then I have a pair that's like, it's a poly and wool blend. And everybody's like, oh, well, I could never wear wool. It's too itchy. But, you know, if you moisturize your skin, or the more you wear the wool, the oilier it gets, the more relaxed it is on your body. It's like, I don't even like, it doesn't itch. It doesn't itch my body at all.
Well, you be lotioning up, Mark? You be lotioning up?
You know what? To be honest with you, I don't.
Not enough.
I am not enough. I am a greasy human being. Naturally, my skin is. It's like you. It's like touch the skin. The skin is like. Tom Huston, it's smooth, you know. It is super smooth. It is super soft. I mean,
You got the natural hydration in the Stanthery.
Not some of you overgrown orangutans. How's the quote go?
What are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Touch the skin, honey.
Touch the skin.
Touch the skin. You can't have this gorgeous skin because you are what? An overgrown orangutan.
That's when Paris is burning. But I do pull that out every now and then because people are like,
Venus extravaganza. Your skin is so smooth. Rest in peace.
Yes. And for the record, he was not calling me a monkey. It's a quote from a movie, and he was saying it to the listener. So he's calling you a monkey.
He's calling me a monkey.
I was looking at Fausto when I said it. And technically, I do believe that an orangutan is an ape.
There we go. They don't have tails.
My favorite thing, you know, underwear stuff is Spanx. Because they advertise it.
Oh,
okay. And if you use the code FEAST at checkout, you got 10% off, honey. I got you a gift certificate.
Oh, really?
Gift certificate?
Yes.
You got a gift certificate? You can use FEAST at checkout for 10% off. And they're not. They didn't even pay for that. I'm just saying it right now. That's free.
That's my first layer of tights when I pad. So noted.
Yeah. The thing about Spanx, and a lot of people don't know, is like, especially it's heavy duty compression wear.
Mm-hmm.
Like that makes all that other stuff it looks like you got it from wish.com.
And the thing that I like about it most is like, you know, yes, it does kind of like pull you in, but it also kind of is great for your posture, right? You stand tall, you stand firm, and you're like, you're there.
Yeah, in fact, we've worn, here's a little secret, for a lot of the Cooking with Drag Queen videos, we're Spanx underneath it.
Yeah.
Work.
And when we're dressed as men, and you can tell, like, there's an episode or two where we're not wearing them.
You're like,
There's a little chunky monkey there.
She's helping herself to those cocktails a lot, I see.
You know, just smooth everything out. Nothing wrong with it. You know, women do it. Men can do it too.
It's part of it is like if you're going to be filmed on television next to a drag performer who is cinching and shaping and padding everything to look fierce and beautiful, you have to, you know, hold your own.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, all day, every day. Look, you know? Drawing my eyebrows, put a little fucking concealer on, like... We're going to be on camera.
Yeah, sometimes I'm wearing more makeup than the queens are.
Look, I ran a Saturday night party where we hired go-go boys, and I was like, oh, y'all wear just as much makeup as the queens. Got it. Okay.
Oh, really?
Please do not actually touch your face to this fabric when you give me a hug, because that shit will stain, and I don't want to ruin this outfit.
Anybody who wears white to anything other than a white party is, you know, asking for it, in my opinion. That's why I don't like white parties.
I mean, I love how white looks against my skin tone for a photo shoot. Mm. If we have to leave the house.
The last white party we went to was a memorial party for Chuck Renslow, who is the founder of a civil rights, you know, gay rights leader here in Chicago, founder of the IML, the International Mr. Leather. And the car was like being a little weird. And so I dropped Fausto off because we're getting late. And I'm just like, let me go park. And as I'm pulling into the parking thing, all of a sudden, just like the front explodes and like there's steam everywhere and black stuff flying. And I'm just like,
oh my God,
what the heck? And I'm all dressed up in white. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And so I just kind of like, I'm just going to go in and we'll deal with this when we come back out.
It was a fabulous memorial service.
Oh, wow.
It was literally legendary. And like you had like queer, you know, porn stars, drag performers, civil rights activists, politicians, all say, you know, waxing poetic about this person who really, I mean, when you think of leather, like wearing, you know, Chuck Renslow made that mainstream, go mainstream all around the world. And, you know, if it wasn't for his efforts with the International Mr. Leather competition, it would just be a weird little thing that people do in Chicago or in Europe. But a lot of people wouldn't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the IML, you know, they do the competition every year. Memorial Day, is it?
Yeah, I think this year they're going to do it in November because they're just not going to be able to make the deadline.
Yeah.
So it's been rescheduled, folks.
If you can ever come to that, it's lit.
Oh, I've been wanting to for a while now. A couple of my friends have been Mr. Eagle New York, and so they go and compete and represent New York in Chicago every year. So That's been something that I've seen a lot of pictures from. So I'm like, hey, Nasty Pig, you need somebody to work your booth?
Yeah, you would shine at that.
You know, my friend Jimmy Sprinkles runs Asterix. I should hit him up and be like, hey, you need somebody to.
What's that?
Work your booth. It is an apparel line that basically takes glitter and sequins and puts them on like harnesses and jock straps.
Yeah. We saw that. We checked that out. We always check out all the booths. I'm always very interested.
The booth babes always like me and I like them.
Yes.
And last year, one of the first things that I did to reintegrate myself back into New York City nightlife after working on the production team for Honey Davenport after she was on Drag Race, I was one of the runway models in the Asterix Fashion Week show, which was very, very fun. And I got to keep my bright pink sequin jockstrap from that.
Ooh.
Which you are posing on your social media with, I'm sure.
I'm not sure if I've posted it yet. I've done a photo shoot, but I knew I couldn't put that on Instagram because there was some taco meat sticking out. And they like to report you if you don't have everything exactly cleanly shaven. So I was
Photoshop, baby. Photoshop.
Yeah, send me the picture. I'll retouch it in a flattering way. You know what I'm saying?
You're an angel. Make the bulge bigger, too.
I'm convinced that, you know, because I see some of these guys, like I follow, you know, these booth babes on social media. And some of them I'm like, girl, you are totally, you know, liquefying that bulge. I'm not complaining either.
You know, a cock ring will do a lot to make everything look bigger because, it lifts and separates.
Yeah. And at IML, before the pandemic, I mean, you would walk around and you're like, there's that porn star, and they're standing there not doing anything. They're bored to tears. Mm-hmm. So I would go up to them and I'd be like, hey, why don't you pretend like I'm the hottest guy you've ever met and let's take a picture together.
They're always into it.
And they're like, sure, why not?
You're like, oh, you're so sexy.
With the accent.
Well, they're, you know, from, you know, Yugoslavia
or Bulgaria,
Brazil, you know.
Oh my God. They're and like, also, yeah. Take like get yourself a real cock ring because that stupid trick of tearing up a condom and using it as a band, ooh, like that doesn't work if you have pubic hair.
That's
like,
gonna hurt.
Not fun.
No, don't ever do that, please.
A go-go boy told me that once and I was like, oh yeah, this is a good idea. I tried to take that shit off. I was in a world of pain. Not fun.
No, the thing is, it's like, you know, I've tried having sex with a cock ring on, but it's only good if you have whiskey dick, you know what I'm saying, or other kinds of dick, you know, but it's not the kind of thing, ask Tina Burner. She's familiar with that.
Oh,
what do you mean?
her name.
Oh,
I just figured out what the name meant this week.
How could you not?
I was just like, I thought it was a pun on Tina Turner. And I was like,
it is a pun on Tina Turner.
I know, but it's also a pun on drug use. Right?
Yes, of course.
And I was just like, I just thought she's on fire like Tina Turner, but she's Tina Burner, you know, and not my brain, my little innocent brain. I was like, oh, it's meth burner.
For people that don't know, Tina is crystal meth.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Look, on the season right after Crystal Meth Head, so.
Yeah, I'm like, if you want to get on Drag Race, you should call yourself, like, you know.
Next year, it's Crackina.
Crackho.
But God help Brita Filter or Jan Sport have their full names on screen.
Well, it's a brand name.
Yeah. That's America for you.
Mm-hmm. Capitalism over everything.
Yeah. Later this week, we're actually going to talk to Mystique. Who's close friends with
Nina Bonino, Osama bin Laden, RuPaul Charles Brown.
Thank you. Who's in
RuPaul
hot water.
Andre Charles Brown, I'm sorry.
Yes, RuPaul Andre Charles Brown, who's gotten hot water because she said, oh, I see that she got mixed, you know, not having to pad like the other queens. Isn't that interesting? She, people are like, canceled. And I said to her, honey, it's like, you know how many times fans of RuPaul's Drag Race have tried to cancel us?
Yeah.
Shit.
You can't cancel something that's been canceled 10,000 times already, you know?
Well, you can't cancel somebody who's willing to have a conversation to listen.
Yeah.
And, you know, exactly. For Gina from Star Wars, you know.
She didn't want to listen.
She didn't want to listen. She's like, my rights, man.
I'm going to have my ignorant thinking, and that's the only way it is. And if you don't like it, you can cancel me. Okay, you're canceled.
Cancel this contract. Cancel these endorsements.
Mm. And that's true. I think that, you know, I have yet to see an artist or a performer who ever lost a job or a gig because of the fact that they wanted to listen and wanted to grow. And the gig or the organization said, no more chances.
Mm-hmm. Look, people are fully allowed to make mistakes in my book. And I think there should be more chances for people to make mistakes. And they should be called out and held accountable for it. But we should be saying, hey, here's how you fucked up. Here's how you can fix it. Come on over here. Mm-hmm. It's all good. Yeah. Here, we got you.
Yeah. If canceling was real, Trump would have been impeached.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, though, too, is, you know, it's like you give second chances to the people who you want to give second chances to. But as long as they have anything in your book that is a strike against them, maybe they're a woman, maybe they're older than you, maybe there's somebody that you don't find attractive, maybe you don't like the color of their skin or something like that, then that's part of the thing that people don't get with these isms, is those second chances never get made, right? You make that one mistake and it's over for you, but somebody else, they can make 3, 4, 5 mistakes and they keep on going.
Oh yeah, people definitely are not consistent with their punishment for said mistakes. Mm.
And I think that's part of what's driving the outrage mm-hmm. against Justin yeah. Timberlake, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, also for you know to Misha, right?
Tessica.
I don't want to call her Gorilla Glue Girl because I find it like.
You know, I mean, it's,
she does have a name.
Yeah, she does have a name. And some people are like, I'm not going to call her that. But, you know, part of me is just like, I know it's hard for her, but I think in the end it's going to be really good for her. Especially if she's trying to do like stuff online and create content online. It's a way for her to just really kind of get known, and you know, she'll rise above that moniker, hopefully. And part of it is like, I like it when people make silly mistakes.
Yeah,
you know, it's fun. It makes this world interesting. Imagine if we didn't push boundaries. Imagine if we just always did exactly what we thought was what we should do and not experiment. I mean, if we didn't experiment in life, I mean, how would we even know how to have gay sex? Oh, maybe that's instinctual. I don't know. Maybe we wouldn't have baking soda. I don't know.
I mean, innovation comes from taking chances, taking risks, and not being willing to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes.
Yeah. And if you
the best entrepreneurs are serial entrepreneurs mm-hmm. because they keep trying shit and shit fails that you don't hear about mm-hmm. and you hear about the thing that's a big success.
And I want to hear from some drag queens out there who style wigs and you think like, hey, I don't think that Got2B is going to hold this. And will this work on like a synthetic hair weave?
So you're still trying to advocate Gorilla Glue for wigs?
You know, how could that not hold a curl, right? How could that not? Right?
Do not try this at home. This is for entertainment purposes only.
Or if you have a mohawk, like people in the 70s that did those mohawks, they used to have to build them out of like egg whites. You know, or they would do super glue or Elmer's glue. Imagine being able to just kind of like spray that and go.
I had a friend of mine who was a roommate. He laid on his side and we made a mohawk using saran wrap and Elmer's glue.
And how did it
work? God.
It looked fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Did you color the Elmer's glue at all or no?
No. It was a like a silver gray bleached hair.
Okay.
It looked, you know, well, you know.
It was great till he had to sleep sitting up.
He never slept. He would go to the clubs. He was so embarrassed. This is one of my roommate, Nico. He was so embarrassed. He would make me drop him off a corner from the club because he didn't want to be seen in my shitty car dropping him off in front.
You're like somebody's dad.
I was like somebody's dad at the age of like 19.
Dad
I will say with the Gorilla Glue with wigs, Gorilla Glue is not to be made to be put on your skin. Wigs go on your skin, and a lot of times you sweat. Mm. And so that's probably not a great idea. I'm sure there's a joke to be had in there, but if you're seriously thinking about doing it, there are products that are made to have contact with your skin that will work.
Kareem McJagger, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's always fun talking to you guys. Whether the tape is rolling or not, I enjoy our conversation.
I know, I do too. Like, you're like my new gal pal. Yeah. Roses are red. Up. Roses are red. Violets are blue. Don't confuse the KY for the Gorilla Glue.
Oh wow! This is why I don't like having sex with the lights off.
Yeah. As if gay people use KY jelly, right?
Nobody uses that.
Especially not warming. Bad idea.
Mm-mm. Oh, it's just, it's so, you know, you. This is why I don't have sex with people who are like, I just came out of the closet and I'm like, oh, you're going to have a tube of KY there, aren't you?
Yeah. It's not going to be silicone based.
And I'm like, no. Never, never, never.
And Wet Platinum does make a pump handle one in a 1/2 gallon size, which per ounce is cheaper than buying the smaller one.
I had to write to my friend who's a chemist. I'm like, why the hell is silicone lube so expensive? And he's just like, it's probably just, you could probably get the ingredients and make it a lot cheaper.
I'm sure.
It's just industrial lubricant. It's expensive because of liability, and I guess they have to make sure that it's not going to irritate your skin. But some people, myself and others, do have a mild allergic reaction to silicone-based lubricant. And so, like, for myself, I have to, like, wipe it off and shower it off. Otherwise, there's a rash, like, a week later, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm like, but I love my lubricants, honey.
And if you have a bottle of the detergent that you wash dishes with, like the soft version, like Dawn, but usually like the soft version, that really washes it off much better than soap does, for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you're
Fausto,
yes, sir.
Just know that I got a double-headed shower with a detachable hose that if you need to rinse off, that is at your disposal. All
right. We're going to be on your OnlyFans. At this rate, every Lady Bunny's going to be on OnlyFans too.
Oh, speaking of fan platforms, yes. Today is the 3rd anniversary of Just for Fans, which is actually a platform that is intended for sex workers, unlike OnlyFans.
Isn't it weird that they just like named each other almost the same thing? And you like people use the terms interchangeably, but they're like very different companies.
They are very different companies, but I believe Just for Fans was, it came after, but I believe it was named so that it could be, people would associate it with the same thing as, you know, categorically as OnlyFans, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, that's the thing about it is like, God, you know, salute to those two, what do we call those crowdsourcing platforms that made it possible for like people with nudity or sexually explicit work to monetize it and, you know, decentralize the adult film industry. And, you know, a lot of people survived this pandemic based on the revenue that they got from those things.
Yeah. And apparently all those porn companies that were putting up black squares and pledging to hire more black models are not following through. But Just for Fans just put out an article. It was maybe a month or two ago where they showed that most of their top earners are people of color, like their top 10. So,
well, if you are a stunning, gorgeous, popular black man, you're a fool to sign up with a adult film company. In my opinion, you're going to make much, much more money if you're doing it on yourself, you know, it's like, cause I follow all these people on Instagram.
It might be something for have a good start or something like that. So you kind of get out there cause then somebody's doing the marketing for you, in that kind of sense. And you do get, you know, some good money up front. So it might be a good starter, right? And also, it's, you know, for a lot of people that do that kind of adult work, you know, the porn that you do for, you know, the companies, that's your calling card, right? That's, you don't
that
make
opens
your,
the door.
That opens the door for seeing people and making personal appearances in their bedroom.
It's like getting on RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah. You know, you're not going to make a living from the money they pay you to be on RuPaul's Drag Race. You make a living from your Just for Fans account after being on RuPaul's Drag Race.
There you go. And also, fuck a lawyer and get them to look over your contract.
Lawyers are good.
Yeah. So, we were going to get to here talking about Candy Muse, but that's we're saving that for our show with Mystique Summers, who used to live in Chicago. She lives now in Texas.
And she was the Candy Muse of her season, right?
She was at some degrees. Yeah. She was somebody who was, pigeoned as an angry queer drag performer of color who was, untamed beauty. And, in some ways, it's the same narrative over and over again. People are comparing, Candy Muse to Silky Ganache. There was a meme going out there that,
Miss Vanjie plus Silky Ganache equals Candy Muse.
Fun fact, drag queens don't like to be compared to other drag queens. Yeah. So it is not a compliment when you walk up to a girl at a gig and say, oh, you remind me of Aquaria, or oh, you remind me of Raja. Just say, you look amazing, and leave it at that.
Yeah. Nobody likes to be compared. We used to always get that on the website. People would leave comments. This person reminded me of this person, except they're this, or this person reminded me of this. I'm just like, I just started deleting them after a while. Don't make comparisons between two people. It's never really a compliment.
I learned the hard way.
How's that?
I got in a fight with one of the Rue girls. She was attacking me first. And I was like, oh, we're going to be throwing shade at each other. I was like, okay. And then I started showing shade, and she didn't realize she was dealing with a Sith Lord.
The shade is strong with this one.
Yes, honey. And I even have t-shirts for sale for that. And and she gagged.
This conversation is over. She gets up and walks away.
She was gagging. Yeah. And I was just trying, honestly, and I was trying to be very nice and sweet. And that ended. I'll tell you after the show who it was, but.
Oh my God. Did you watch Bridgerton at all?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Regé Jean Page is going to host SNL.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to show his butt?
Probably. What did you think when he jizzed in that handkerchief? Were you kind of like, what the heck's going on here?
Oh, like, do you remember I was watching it, and the first couple of times, I was like, is he pulling out? Because they never really, they didn't address it at first.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I was like, oh, he must be pulling out like on purpose. This must be a thing.
Because we all know if you don't pull out, if you pull out, she won't get pregnant.
Oh, 100% of the time. Fail safe.
Mm-hmm. sarcasm detected. Just so people, if there's any people out who are worried about making babies, it doesn't work.
I got pregnant because I took medical information from the Feast of Fun podcast.
Oh, no.
I'm going to sue Kareem. I'm suing Mark and Fausto.
No.
I was like, great. Come after our money. Kareem, they're gonna freeze your assets.
Please don't take away my microphone and my 5-year-old laptop. Please.
Your wish.com microphone.
How dare you? This came from, I was about to say Radio Shack. God.
Oh, rest in peace. You know, a lot of the hardware that we use on this podcast to this day came from Radio Shack.
Oh, wow. They just had adapters for everything. Everything.
And they were made out of gold.
Yeah, the gold-plated ones. Yeah, gold and platinum.
Yeah, so I'm like right now talking, the headphone is connected to a gold adapter from Radio Shack right there. I'm looking at it. That is 17 years late. 16? 16 years later.
Girl. Boom. Got your money's worth.
That thing is going to outlive us all.
It's going to be that gold-plated adapter and Cher and the cockroaches.
They're like, we don't know what happened here, but it was very strange. Kareem, so good talking to you. So people who want to follow you on social media.
Yes, you can find me at Kareem McJagger, KareemMcJagger. That's on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Venmo, on Cash App, on drag4.fans. Anywhere you want to see me, just put in Kareem Mick Jagger.
I really like that drag queens have mainstreamed asking people for money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, because before this pandemic, people were like, oh, she's throwing her Cash App.
You know,
and it's like now nobody blinks.
I don't like to demand tips from people. I like to let people know that they have permission to give me money.
Are you not entertained? Did you not like the show?
You will feel better about your night if you give me money. Like, it's an interactive experience, and that's part of the experience.
Yeah,
you're
listen,
welcome.
Dutch marks are dollars. American Express will do nicely. Thank you. Would you like me to talk about Kareem McJagger's Just for Fans account again?
Where is that saxophone solo when you need it?
Girl, I was always hot for
still
Tina
around,
Turner.
Isn't he?
He still looks good. Yeah. Tina Turner's
sax. I think I follow him on Instagram or something like that. Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful.
Legendary.
Hey, listen, Kareem, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast and being our Valentine.
Mwah. Thank you, too. It has been such a pleasure, as always.
And
thank
Timmy you. Capello, if you're out there, give us a call. I'll blow on your saxophone for a change.
Bye-bye.
Hey, take care.
I want to remind folks, we can't do the podcast without your support. We're in our 17th season. Yes, that is right. We have completed 16 years of podcasting.
Yes, honey.
We started in 2005. It is 2021, and we are still going. And the reason why we're still going is because of people just like you who are listening to that podcast that stepped forward and said, hey, I like this programming. I like what these guys do. I like the guests they have. I want to keep this going. Future generations can enjoy it. And you can help sponsor this podcast by becoming a Plus member at feastofun.com/plus. Make a one-time donation at feastofun.com/donate. Or if it's just easier, mail at Feast of Fun for PayPal, Feast of Fun for Cash App, Feast of Fun for Venmo. And if you'd like, visit our store. Get yourself a Not Shaving Gives Me More Time for Misbehaving t-shirt. All that stuff goes to support this podcast that you're listening to, that you love, and that you want to keep around for years to come.
And Timmy Capello, if you if you're listening to this right now, you can slip in my DMs on Fausto Furnos on Instagram, and I'll blow your horn.
That's right.
Yeah, we don't need another hero. Don't need another hero.
Now, since it is Valentine's Day, yes. Can you finish flirting up with him and maybe flirt with your husband for a little bit?
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, here, put this saxophone on and put this short long wig on and this black tank top.
Thank you, darling. I sure will. I love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and to everyone. Bye.